Today I'm going to be talking with The Holding Group. It's a team of four licensed clinical social workers that have been owning and operating a community-based palliative care program for the last 5 years. Not only are they working for themselves, but they're working on something that they truly believe in with some of their closest friends. Each member of the founding group, Erin Nielsen, Bree Addison Owens, Dana Lehoff, and Laurel Tropiano, not only bring a unique skill set, making a rich personal experience, but they also bring meaningful experiences to their patients and providers that they serve. Today, I'm going to be spending time with Dana and Erin, who will share with me how to create a data-driven approach to social work and palliative care, and how asking the difficult questions with your patients will actually save you time coordinating their care, and that you can run your own business, even if you are planning on having a baby, or maybe many babies in this case. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Today we are here with Erin Nielsen and Dana Lehoff. They are two of the four founders for The Holding Group. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start off with probably the simplest question. If you could just give us an overview, Erin, of what is The Holding Group and what do you guys do?
Well, The Holding Group is a company that is led by four clinical social workers that provide consultation and support for patients and families who are dealing with serious illness. And that looks like we're guiding by their side. We meet them at really critical points of their illness journey and just find out what do you know, what do you understand, and what are you hoping for. And then by knowing the medical situation and knowing how to talk to the doctors, we really help break down the silos between healthcare systems to lift up what someone's hoping for, lift up the questions that they may have, and provide the information that they need to make the best decisions moving forward regarding next steps with their healthcare.
So is this fair to say this is a palliative care company?
Yes.
Okay. And how did you guys come up with the name The Holding Group?
I was explaining that this morning when I was meeting with some women that work in the community to see how we could partner. And when I kept talking to them, I kept using my hands and kept putting it like in the circle like we're holding, and realized that that's how we came up with our name as well. When we were talking about we want to help people, we want to help families, we want to lift the person out of the system and put them back in the center, our hands just kept using this cupping motion where it came to like we were holding them, that we were this kind of safety net foundation. Granted, we get confused by law firms every once in a while as The Holding Group, but
I think we found
the name rings true. We're just there to kind of hold space for the patient.
Mm-hmm. And so I have two of you with me today, but there's actually four founders for this company. Dana, do you want to maybe give like a quick overview? How did you guys come together, and is it a good idea to have four founders to a company?
Sure. Yeah. So we all met actually working at a previous agency and kind of built this program together, really starting there. One by one, we sort of became a little frustrated with the bureaucracy of the agency and, you know, not really having a seat at the table for bigger picture decisions of our little program that really it was the four of us that were running and doing. So our colleague Bree Owens had this idea, like, hey, we can do this by ourselves. We don't need to work under this other agency. Let's do this. So we founded the company, and that was in 2012.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I didn't realize it. Been that long.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a long time. Okay.
Yeah. So that's when we founded the company. So far for us, we have had a good experience having four founders. I think it's not without its challenges, but somehow the four of us, I think, really do bring very different strengths to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how we decided to do this was because we all were really different, I think, the four of us, and each brings something really different.
Yeah. I think our success of our previous work was evident just by the four of us contributing and realizing that we wouldn't be where we were or thinking this big or thinking that we could do this without each other contributing. Mm-hmm. So Yeah.
So you're all four licensed clinical social workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What advice might you have for other LCSWs that want to start their own business in healthcare?
Yeah. I think one thing that social workers, speaking sort of generally, aren't great at is like capturing your data and showing your outcomes. We really learned that, I think, when we left the agency that we started under. And I think when we worked there, we didn't have a good understanding of the finances, you know, and that bottom line. I mean, we had an idea, but we didn't really know the specifics. And when we were out on our own, I mean, we realized first and foremost that setting up the business in a way that the financial incentives of the intervention are set up the right way, if that makes sense.
I think that we knew that we needed to speak with numbers and not just the qualitative results, but the quantitative too. And being social workers, we're more woo-woo based. We're more about... just kind of the heart of the business. And so for a while it's like, well, we want to do this because this is the right thing, but it's hard to make a business out of it when you can't back what the right thing is with financially solvent, plan or feasibility. So I think, like you said, the advice is have the data, collect the numbers, even if you aren't a statistician, document the data so you can at least represent your goals.
And did you guys do that, I assume?
We did. Yeah.
What are some of your outcomes or your best numbers that you flash in front of people?
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, even just really simple things like, okay, what are the concrete things that we do? Well, we help people complete advanced directives. So starting, you don't need to know the whole, you can't capture everything. You don't have to capture everything. But thinking about, okay, what can I easily capture and starting there? So, how many, medical powers of attorney do we help people complete? Or really the percentage, what percentage of our clients end up completing some type of advanced directive? Mm-hmm. That's kind of a simple one.
Yeah, I mean, I think in big picture, we've seen that our intervention of just meeting with the patient family and talking about their wishes, we increase completion of medical power of attorney. We increase completion of people electing not to have attempted resuscitation. Not like that's our goal, but through conversation, people choose that. We've decreased rehospitalizations. We've decreased length of hospitalizations. And we've increased patient satisfaction overall care. So those kind of meet all those triple aim, fancy term things that really just have helped communication between healthcare providers and what the patient's wanting.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really fair to say that the insurance companies, I mean, I think we've all heard the statistic, something like 90% of all healthcare dollars are spent in the last 4 months of life, or 80%, whichever statistic that you want to lean on. Mm-hmm. And that even the best insurance companies maybe have 15% of their population over 65 have an advanced directive. And if they were to get that number closer to 20 or 30%, that would save the healthcare system multi-millions, if not billions of dollars each year. I don't think it's woo-woo at all.
We don't either. That's where we see the value.
Yeah. Advanced directive.
Right.
Or helping people take control of the end of their life, which is really the core piece of that.
Absolutely.
Do you guys have partners that you partner with? Do you have people that pitch to you or want to sell you products?
I think we've had hospice agencies that want us to know who they are. Mm-hmm. So that if we are referring somebody to hospice, we know about their agency, that kind of thing. Our biggest partner is Kaiser Permanente. That's the one contract we have right now that is what makes our business viable and successful financially. So we work with Kaiser patients who are in long-term acute care hospital setting and provide them with just a social work consultative service to make sure they're getting good information about their illness and what to expect and all of their options.
Mm-hmm. And when you do have somebody that needs hospice or needs something else, maybe it's not hospice or a different level of care, how do you pick one provider over another, Erin?
Well, I think we first do the assessment of what the patient needs, what's most appropriate, and what are their resources, you know, taking in the full picture financially, where are they going to end up living, what do we predict, you know, if we see someone with a serious illness that, you know, let's say they are going towards hospice, and we can understand that their illness may get to the point where they could really benefit from an inpatient hospice, then you start to think about the hospices that only have inpatient care centers and things like that. I mean, patients always have choice, and so our goal is to give that option of resources. But it's also, we don't want to be just, you know, like giving them a phone book and saying, here are the resources, figure it out. I mean, we want to do a step more than that. So we just speak about all the pros and cons and what we know about within the local community, and then encourage them to meet, you know, with the agency that fits. But we try to narrow it down so it's not this overwhelming list of any agency. Let's pick the one that makes sense for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can you guys tell me a little bit about your business model without giving away any proprietary rights or anything? But what are some of the choices you had when you were looking at, and I imagine you guys thought about doing a PMPM or a case rate, or could you kind of walk us through maybe how, what some of those choices might be for a community hospice, a palliative care program, and what you thought about when you picked?
For sure.
Where you want to go?
So one thing we realized when we were working under that other agency, that the reimbursement system was, for our program, just did not make sense. It didn't incentivize the right things. And that was a, like a per visit
fee. Fee for service.
Yeah, fee for service. So, which didn't exactly make sense for a social work, you know, service that is providing information, that's maybe you're talking to the primary care doctor, you're talking to the oncologist, you're doing a lot of behind the scenes care coordination phone calls. And we were getting a lot of pressure, like, just get out and see the patient. It doesn't really matter about the quality of work that you're doing. We just want you laying eyes on that patient because that's what you can bill for. Mm-hmm. So we really advocated for, with our, you know, client that we're serving, like a case rate. So just an umbrella fee for every patient that we enroll in our program. And then we get to kind of decide how our time is managed. And if it's best served by going out to do another visit with them, we do that. If it is more behind the scenes sort of phone calls to their providers or gathering information or going to the, you know, maybe the IDT team meetings, we can kind of, we have the flexibility to spend our time how it makes sense for them.
And did you guys explore doing a PMPM or a fee-for-service?
I think we did in the very beginning, and nothing really set well with us. Like, we wanted to ethically feel like we're doing right by patients and we're making money to be able to continue to serve patients. But every time we started thinking about these fee-for-service things, it just came down to we'd be then motivated and driven by the next visit. And we could, well, then we actually grew some empathy to our previous agency because we understood, oh, now we get it. Now we understand why they kept doing this. But that's not how we wanted to run our business. We knew that we, whatever care we do is going to be led by the patient needs. And if we can be financially stable in that process, great. But we need to be able to sleep at night and feel good about what we're doing. And so I think that was actually one of our biggest accomplishments because when going through contracting and negotiating with Kaiser, we were the first time that they had done that, accepted that type of model service, and kept wanting to default back to the fee-for-service. And we stayed pretty firm and we were able to do it, and it's worked out well, I think, for on both ends. We feel really good about it.
Good. Yeah. How do you guys want to go from here? What's your, how do you, over the next 3 to 5 years, maybe, I don't know, what are your hopes and dreams? What does the holding group want to be when they grow up?
When we grow up, I know. Well, we want to continue to be around. I think that's our first goal. So I think people don't necessarily know what they don't know, and especially when it comes to end of life and illness and just how this whole healthcare system works. And so we've learned that although we do private, you know, connecting with people and having consultation and advanced care planning sessions, that's not something people say, oh, I want to wake up and spend money on that today. But we have seen that it's incredibly beneficial when it's embedded in a healthcare system. And so we currently are embedded in the Kaiser benefit. And that has worked out well because then it's just part of the plan, part of the care, and families are very grateful and receptive for it. We would like to be able to expand us being embedded into more healthcare providers than just Kaiser. We get calls on a regular basis saying, I have a patient, we'd love for you to work with them and their family. They don't have Kaiser. Can you see them? And so I think our goal is to be able to expand our services, and knowing that we did just hire our first employee, which is exciting. Mm-hmm. But knowing that it can't just always be provided by us, but we've created a training model that really captures the work that we're doing. And so we would love to be able to teach other people, do this work. There are too many people in this world that really could benefit from education and support when they're in the hospital system, more than the four or five of us are ever going to be able to help. So we would love to teach others how do you do this effectively, where it works, if we can help other people. So I think education, I think more clinical services with other health insurance providers, and again, just kind of being able to still have work-life balance. That's, I think, the biggest piece, too, is we're working for ourselves and having fun with it.
Does it make you nervous to just have the one client? Does that keep you guys up at night?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think we recognize that we are very grateful for our contract and that we would love to expand it.
All right, so here's our problem question. What do you think that the biggest problem is in healthcare? It can certainly be in your industry, but what's the biggest thing that you guys face?
Yeah, I think it's still kind of that old medical model where it's not really based on the patient. That's kind of a general statement, but I think when you kind of are embedded in a medical system, the way that providers and, you know, talk about patients and families, even amongst each other, it's such a medical culture. And it's not really grounded in, like, who is this person? You know, what are their values? What do they need? It's still really coming, you know, there's still so much language of, like, they're not compliant with their meds. Kind of negative
focus. How do we move to solution space there?
I mean, I think we're going to have to, especially with this baby boomer. I don't know how we get there, but I think every time doctors witness us working and realizing all we did was sit down, we didn't stand over a patient, we were at eye level, and we took five more minutes than maybe they would have to just say, like, tell me what you understand, or to what how can I help you? What are you hoping for? And then let's hope together and plan for all whatever may come about. Realizing that, I mean, although we are trained and have specialties in this, it's not rocket science. It's really not. It's just taking the time to say, where are you in this space, and how can I help you there with the realities of your medical illness, you know, and add that information into it. I think we're going to have to take a big pause in our healthcare system and just talk to people again.
I think it's more efficient to do that too, even though it might seem like, oh, I don't have the time. But then you're doing cleanup of all this poor communication. And when patients and families are like unhappy because they didn't get good communication, it's so much more work to kind of go back and try to clean that up and do that customer service thing.
Because all of a sudden you find yourself in the ICU for 4 months and you don't even realize how we got there because we didn't understand the situation from the first part. So,
I'm sure I've stolen this from somebody, but I'm sure you guys have heard this, that we try and solve social problems with medical solutions. That is something that we, you know, as a healthcare system do all the time. These aren't, they're not all symptoms that need to be managed.
Right.
of times it's just something social. So this question wasn't on here, but it's one that I've been thinking of. How do you guys make palliative care fun? Is it fun? We'll start there. And then how do you guys make end of life and palliative fun?
I think, like, you know, people are so resilient generally. Like, they're way more resilient than you would expect them to be, I think, a lot of the time. So, yes, it sounds like this is going to be so overwhelming. This is going to be so hard. When you read somebody's chart and you see what they're dealing with. And a lot of the time, I mean, so when you read the chart ahead of time, it kind of sets you up for like, oh my gosh, this is going to be not fun. But then you, 9 times out of 10, the patient and family are more resilient than you expected them to be. You know, this is a lot of the time, not all the time, it's something they've been dealing with for a long time. You're not the first person to sit down and have, you know, this conversation with them. Hopefully you're not. But, I mean, people, I think, will surprise you, and they've been coping effectively or in some way, you know, for a while, and you'll see that when you sit down and talk with them.
Yeah. I mean, that's fun because you get to hear people's stories. Mm-hmm. People are fascinating. Yeah. I mean, it is amazing how people function and just what's, you know, a quality day for them. And just, I'm fascinated on a regular basis of what someone, like you said, is resilient, like is willing to live like or live with, or has how they functioned or how they laugh and work as a family. Like, I just get a kick out of it. Plus it's people who are facing end of life issues, and so their values, I think, and priorities are pretty keen and aware, and so they're good mm-hmm. teachers for me. I mean, to go home and hug my little girl and really appreciate when I'm not working, you know, mm-hmm. and going out for a meal and things like that, it definitely makes me feel more grateful too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good lens to live your life. Like, would I regret the way I'm living?
Right.
If I were in their shoes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk about how you guys balance your work life. There's a plethora of babies in this 4 female group. So mm-hmm. how do you guys manage to balance your time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think none of us work full time for the holding group. I think we all have decided that we are going to work as much as we feel like we can, one, financially, as well as just work-life balance. We also are 4 women that are doing our damnedest to try to be good partners and good moms and good friends. And if one of our kiddos is sick, there's not a question of calling it and saying, hey, daycare's not going to work for me today. And knowing that there's no judgment or excuse beyond that. Mm-hmm. You know, we get it. But it's hard.
Yeah.
a lot of Saturday meetings.
Yeah. And we do, like, once a year we sit down and talk about, mm-hmm. okay, what do each of us want? What do we see for ourselves professionally? What do we see for ourselves personally? Mm-hmm. How do those things kind of go together? Mm-hmm. And so we each make sure that we talk about, like, what do you, for the next year, for the next 5 years, mm-hmm. what are you seeing for you know, the holding group? What are you seeing for your personal mm-hmm. life? What are you needing? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think, for example, one of our partners, Bree, was hoping to be able to take a year off after the birth of her second child. And we've known that for a very long time, that that's something that is really important mm-hmm. to her. And we try to plan for and support that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
Any parting words of wisdom for families or people that either want to know more about what you guys do or are struggling through?
Yeah, I mean, that we're there. We're happy to be offer counsel and just walk with you during this. They can find more information about us at holdinggroup.org.
I think too, the other thing I meant to say earlier too, if you're trying to start something in healthcare, is just know who your champions are. I guess mm-hmm. that would be the big mm-hmm. thing of, like, you know, who values your work, who knows what you do, and tap into those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great advice. That's so great advice. To get more in contact with you, theholdinggroup.org mm-hmm. could follow your success there.
Yes.
Okay, yes, yeah. Great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks, Jesse, for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode with Dana and Aaron today. If you want to contact us, check us out at joyofhealthcare.com. We'd love to hear your feedback, answer any of your questions, and get your recommendations for future episodes. And of course, please take the time to rate our show on iTunes.